This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
What didn't you agree with?
I did not agree with the whole justice system and how it was brought down onto our family. I felt that I wasn't heard through the whole thing, and now they were taking my husband away.
And what emotions did you have around that?
I was confused. I was hurt. I cried a lot. I think I cried for the first year. Couldn't stop. I was angry at the system. I was angry that my husband wasn't there. There was a time, probably the second month that he was gone, it would have been easier if he would have just died instead of went to prison, because I didn't know that I could go through this without him being there.
So Sharon, how did what happened to Ben and his incarceration affect your life?
Well, as soon as we were in the county and going through lawyers and everything, it impacted us financially. We lost our retirement just before he was incarcerated into the prison system. I lost the house and had to pay the lawyers with the house. And then he was incarcerated. We tried to figure out a way for me to stay in contact with him financially. I had a job, and I had to give up my job to assist the lawyer in my husband's case.
So it was a full-time job just to gather information, the lawyer. Isn't that the lawyer's job?
Normally it's a lawyer's job, but in order to save some of the finances, I did a lot of legwork that we did not get charged for.
So you gave up your job in order to help the lawyer in your husband's case?
Correct. So after he was incarcerated, then I was looking for a job, and I found a job. And I had that job for a year and a half. When I did have a job, we had an apartment, my son and I, and we had all of our belongings in there, which was probably a third of what we had before my husband was incarcerated. And then I lost my job, and I lost the apartment. I was on unemployment looking for work and had no savings, and we ended up in an RV in the back of my sister's house, and that's where we stayed for about 6 months until I found another job. And then my son went to college, and when he went to college, I pretty much house hopped, where I would rent a room for real cheap, and all of my belongings would be in that room until I found my current job.
And all this time, you are maintaining your relationship with your husband?
Correct.
And how did that make you feel?
Determined. I wanted to make sure that we were going to come out of this okay. And I had promised our son when we got married that he was part of this family and nothing was going to happen to this family, no matter what happened.
And your son is your husband's son?
Biological son, right. And so he's my pride and joy, my love. I fell in love with him when he was a year old.
Were you ever angry with Ben?
There was one small period that I was angry with Ben when he said there was nothing he could do to help raise our son. And I told him that he needed to find a way to do that.
While he was in prison?
While he was in prison. And we needed to talk about it. And we came up with a way to help our son and help our marriage and to get through this next 6 years.
And what did you come up with?
Well, one of the things that we came up with to help our son is he was still in school and he needed to hear his dad's voice. So we came up with 3 days a week that he would talk to his son. And we picked specific days, 2 days during the week and one on the weekend, so that our son knew that his dad was still behind him in school.
And Ben, did that help connecting with your son?
Eventually, yes. I think the stage he's referring to had it been maybe 9 months into incarceration.
So the first 9 months, you didn't connect with your son during that time?
Well, we were connected. I mean, we talked, but it was an adjustment. It was the first time I was in prison, and so there was a cultural shock going from freedom to being locked up. And there was a hopeless feeling that you go through, this whole stage of grief. So I felt that, you know, it goes through your mind that you should disconnect and you do your thing and let your family do their thing so that you're not impacting them with what you're going through, the emotions and all the downside to that adjustment. But eventually, like Sharon said, we found a way. She kind of forced the issue on me a little bit, but we did find a way to adjust the way we approached Andrew. And knowing that it was a long distance father figure, I had to find a way to change my thought process. That, you know, wasn't it going to be an immediate reaction, which you would normally have in a household? It would have to be, I'm going to say this, I'm going to ask this, and then wait for the response.
And as a couple, what commitments did you make to each other, knowing that Ben was now incarcerated? How did you stay connected?
Well, I think one of the things that we did after we realized, figured out the rules and the games for Department of Corrections, was that we committed to ourselves that we would stay in contact. We would do everything we could. If we had problems, we would talk about them, even if we had to talk about them in a different way than what we're normally talking about, because it's not easy with DOC to bring your feelings out, whether it's in visitation or over the telephone, because everything's recorded. And so you have to watch what you say, and that was difficult. But we also had our times that we could just talk about daily things, and I think that's kind of what we got through the best way, is because we got to talk about daily things.
How often did you visit, and were there any difficulties with visitations?
The first place he got sent to was Ontario.
And where is Ontario?
About 3 miles from the Idaho border.
What is the distance from Portland to Ontario, Oregon?
It's about 479 miles.
How did you manage to make that trip?
With carpooling. Found ladies that carpooled over, and we would take a van of ladies over there to see our guys over there.
And how long did it take to drive?
Well, we would leave at 5 o'clock p.m., and we'd usually get there about 5 o'clock in the morning, so somewhere between 10 and 12 hours, depending on the weather conditions.
And can you travel that from Portland to Ontario in the wintertime?
No, we did not go in the wintertime. When the snow started, we could not go. There were too many accidents. And our lives were more important than going over there. So we made lots more phone calls in the wintertime than we did.
Yeah. So how often did you get over there?
In Ontario, I made it over there once a month. We had scheduled times that we would go over once a month. And I could take our son over. And we enjoyed the 2 days, 3 days, or whatever we had over there. It was a mini vacation. And I enjoyed the ladies that I was with. That made it easier to travel because they were in the same boat I was in.
Sharon, did you ever get the feeling that you were working way harder than Ben was in this relationship?
No, not in the relationship. And I don't know about...
In this situation?
In this situation, I was trying to hold the family together, so I wasn't looking at how hard I was working. I knew that I had goals, and those goals were to have a visit with my husband. And in order to do that, I needed to work extra in order to do that. And I also needed to make sure that our son got down to see him. So I had to make sure that I had the finances to do that too.
And Ben, knowing what Sharon was going through, how did you feel?
I had two conflicting emotions, sort of. I was very proud of what she was doing, that she was able to step up and provide for Andrew and still be there for our relationship. We often talked about the stresses, even though they're different stresses, one set for me, one set for her. We did have some mutual stresses, and that was Andrew's upbringing, finishing that up all the way through his stint in college. I was kind of eager, and this is kind of a strange scenario, but I was kind of eager to see how she would handle herself, because she's always been a little dependent. And I needed, for my own gratification, in a strange sense, to see what she was capable of and what I thought she was capable of. And when Sharon was able to step forward and take the reins and do what she was able to do for those 6 years, you know, I was very proud of that. I was very proud of what she was able to pull off. And when we talked to others about it, for comparisons, I was amazed. And ultimately what she did, how she juggled so many different things without dropping any of them.
And Sharon, did you find that same strength in Ben?
Actually, I did. If it wasn't for Ben, I don't know that I could have made it through this. I was on the outside. I was raising our son. I was trying to get our son down to see his dad as often as I could. And in going down to see my husband, we would talk about issues, good and bad. And with him talking to me about them gave me strength to keep on going.
Talk about some of the things you both did to keep the love alive. It sounds like you both had a mutual admiration thing going on here. Did that bring you closer together?
I think it did. One of the things for Ben to stay in contact with his son, they would play games together, and that would be through the mail. So it would take several days to get through the mail. Some of the things that I did to keep our love alive was for his birthday, however old he was on that year, I would send him that many cards with a puzzle in them or a picture in them or something, and he would get those cards and he'd get a whole handful of them.
Yeah, and as she was doing that, I would get these packages and get called down to the CO's desk. And the CO, the corrections officer, would tell me, I can't deliver these because I can't slip them under the door. There's too many of them. Can you come down and get them? And I would come down there and get them. And as I'm walking back, this is when the day room's closed, so everybody's in their unit cell. And I would get these people looking, you know, all these guys looking out the window, all jealous and wondering how I got so many cards on my birthday and why I got so many cards on my birthday. And it got to be kind of an interesting conversation starter for the guys because, you know, this was a unique experience for all of us. And to see the support that Sharon was providing, that emotional support, for the guys, it was inspirational. And so some of them were able to use that in their own relationships a little bit.
How did they use it in their own relationships?
Well, they were able to go back and, you know, as, hey, you know.
Why didn't I get 49 cards on
exactly.
my birthday?
Well, a little bit of that, sure. I mean, there's a little bit of jealousy thing going there. And so it's a competitive environment when you had that many guys in a unit. So you would see guys start doing more artwork, sending more artwork home, sending poetry home, anything creative that showed, you know, some individuality. So it was pretty cool. I got razzed a lot, but it's okay.
We only had 5 pictures taken on our wedding. So I would take those 5 pictures and I would send 5 anniversary cards with something special written in them for our anniversary. And then at Christmas, you know, something different to do with that with Christmas. And so cards became my lifeline to him, to show him. That was my way of showing him how much I cared for him, because I couldn't wrap my arms around him, so I figured the cards could, you know. And in turn, he also sent home postcards. He would just send his love in these postcards.
Were you able to wrap your arms around him once a month? During the visits?
During the visits, and that was in Ontario until he got transferred.
And where did he get transferred to?
Oh, he got transferred to Lakeview, which is Warner Creek Correctional Institution, and that is in the middle of the state again, but down towards the Nevada border.
What's the distance?
The same, pretty much. I think there was 23 miles difference between Ontario and Lakeview.
So you went from the Oregon-Idaho border to the Oregon-California border. Is that correct?
Correct. And there was 2 more mountain passes I had to go over.
So a restricted travel during the wintertime again.
Yes, for a longer period of time. And I did not go down once a month.
And if you just tuned in, you're listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James with my guests, Sharon and Ben, who are talking about how they maintain their relationship during incarceration and their experiences since his release in November 2012. So, Ben and Sharon, let's talk about release, what that looked like. Now, Ben, you were released November 2012?
Yes.
What were the thoughts around reentry for both of you?
Well, I'll address it first. We'd have to go about 6 months prior to release. And so we're talking the middle of the year. There's anticipation, a little bit of anxiety because it's another change. There's a lot of unknowns. You've got the community corrections to deal with now, and that's a different scenario, so you're not sure what to expect. But with Sharon and I, we had decided that for our strength of our relationship, we're going to have to go back to this idea of dating, this idea of getting to know each other again. We knew each other, and we had a strong marital base to work with. We were going to be different. And so we needed to take that time, allow ourselves that space to grow back together.
And what do you mean you were different?
What I mean by that we're different, I'm a different human being after 6 years of growth in prison. Sharon's a different human being by taking the responsibilities that she did on her own. So, well, let me preface this a little bit by saying, as we were raising Andrew for that first 14 years, we spent most of the time with Andrew at our side. We didn't take a lot of personal couple time. We didn't go out on a special night that often. And so we didn't do that dating scene thing. And so for us, when I got out of prison, we decided that we needed to take the time to actually do that, to actually go through that romance period.
To go out on a date.
To actually go out on dates. 2 months after release, we finally had our first date. As an adult, it was pretty neat. We actually did a little window shopping and then went down to see a very good movie. And it was very pleasant. We had a really good time. And it was different in that I didn't know what to expect with Sharon. And I don't think she knew what to expect with me. We weren't under any pressures. We weren't under any supervision. Nobody was watching us. So we had this freedom that we haven't had for 6 years. To actually express ourselves and be who we really are around each other.
Did you have any expectations?
No, we tried not to put that on ourselves. We wanted to be able to find out what each other was all about.
Were there any surprises?
Well, for me, there was. I mean, I knew she was independent, and I knew that she had grown into this role that she had assumed over the last 6 years. But I was kind of surprised at how much independence there is, because even little things, she's correcting me or she's saying, well, I wouldn't have done it that way. Well, of course you wouldn't have done it that way. But prior to the incarceration, we would have just said, you know, hey, how about doing it this way? Or we would have worked it through a little bit differently. Right now it's more, there's a little bit of frustration level as we're trying to reconnect. We're out of sync. And so she'll say something and believe it or not, it will offend me a little bit, and I feel like I'm not meeting her need. I'm not meeting anybody's need. I'm in this kind of transition period where I feel like I have too many people asking too many things of me. And so when she makes even the slightest little comment, sometimes I walk away in a kind of a, I can't believe she just did that to me feeling. But it's internal, and it's not really anything that she's done. She's just saying, hey, this is, you know, we run the house a little bit different in this way. And so I'm adjusting to that, and that's kind of difficult at times.
And it's also hard sometimes when I'm expecting him to do something automatically, and he's been incarcerated for 6 years, told what to do. He's waiting for me to tell him what to do. And so that kind of offends me in a way that I'm expecting him just to automatically do it, and he's not doing it.
What do you both do in these situations?
We laugh, and we talk about it. And did I hurt your feelings? Yes, you did, but I'm over it now. Okay, I'll try and work on that next time. So we kind of have a basis of where we can go for the next one that comes up.
Right, and we talked about a little bit of this about in prison, that we needed to give each other that space. We knew there was going to be this melding period. We weren't expecting the kind of melding that's going on. We were probably expecting something a little bit different. But I think right now we're not making judgment, but allowing there to be some space before we come back and say, okay, this is what I saw occurred. This is what she saw occurred, and then work through that.
So Ben, it sounds like you did have some expectations.
I think the only expectation I have was that the communication would be very similar to what we had in the past and what we had developed over 6 years. Well, that communication served its purpose. In prison, doesn't work when you're right in front of the person.
So are the sparks flying after your dates? How's your love life?
Well, the desire's there, and we're both very amorous persons, but we're struggling with that one, because we're not in sync. And so there is a level of needs and expectations that neither one of us are necessarily aware of until after the fact. And so we're trying to address that. It's not an easy thing to pull off.
So the day-to-day frustrations are spilling over into the bedroom. Is that what you're saying?
Not necessarily. What I'm really saying is that...
What are you saying, honey?
There is a lack of physical performance. I don't know how to put that, but there's a buildup. I mean, there's this anticipation, as any normal couple has, you know, excitement and all these rushes of feelings and, you know, chemical emotions. But because there's been a six-year gap, there's this timidness. Well, doctors call it performance anxiety. But basically, we are so eager to please one another and to find each other's comfort zones and to be intimate with each other that I think we're putting too much on ourselves. And so we keep backing off a little bit and letting things kind of work naturally. And so we're still in a transition stage and we'll get there eventually, I think. But right now it's a hit and miss.
What else are you doing to keep the romance alive? You mentioned the dates, which sound wonderful, but the little things. Talk about those.
Well, I think some of the little things is communication is really important to us. And Ben is looking for a job right now, so he calls me when he gets information about anything, good, bad, or indifferent. And it's just so wonderful to hear his voice. I'm sure that it's the same for him also. But when he comes home, he just grabs my hand and just touches my hand for about 3 seconds or touches my shoulder. And it's just, you know, it just means the world to me that I've got that contact.
Well, I would also address that the daily intimacy, the touching of hands, the holding of hands when we're walking somewhere. I'll, you know, put the crook of my elbow out so that she can grab it when we're walking. But as she said, communication brought to mind that I carry a cell phone like most people do these days. And so when I'm going from point A to point B, from an appointment to the grocery store or whatever, hey, I'll make that phone call. Hey, Sharon, I'm here in transition. I just got out of this place and I'm going to this place. Just checking in. How you doing? Do you need anything? You know, how are you feeling? If there's an issue that's been going ongoing, daily issue or something, I'll bring that up and we'll talk a little bit about it. So even though we're apart, we're still in constant communication. Part of that, I think, is because when you're only talking to a person maybe 2 or 3 times a week for 6 years, there's a strong desire to be in constant contact. And for me, it's perfect. I know I'm not alone. I'm not out there stranded. I can't speak for Sharon, but the feeling I get is that Sharon has a strong desire for the same thing, that constant contact. And so both of us are huggers. We like to hug each other constantly. If she's having a rough day, I just open my arms and wait for her to come over and give me a hug because I know she's, you know, reached a level where she needs somebody to reassure her as well. And so we're trying to key into those little cues a little more often. And that's probably the glue that's kind of holding things together right now.
For the both of you, what was the most difficult thing about Ben coming home?
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
The most difficult thing, I think, for me, as far as our relationship, was in the back of my mind, what was she expecting of me? Am I going to meet those expectations? And what happens if I fail?
I think the biggest one was he going to like me? Now that he's out, is he going to like the person that I have become because I'm a different person? And will he still like me?
So, Ben and Sharon, what advice would you have for other married couples out there going through the same situation?
I think one of the things is you need a good foundation for your relationship or marriage long term. And what I mean by that is it can't be 25-75. It has to be 50-50 all the way through the marriage, all the way through the relationship. Everything that you do has to be 50-50. And if you don't have that and you're not willing to work on that, then you're not going to have a very good marriage to begin with. So if you get into a situation where one is incarcerated and the other is not, and you don't have that foundation, one is going to walk over the other one. And that's not good for the relationship, and the relationship will go downhill. If you do have a good foundation, then your marriage should shine even afterwards.
And Ben?
I would actually like to come from the angle of being incarcerated and my experiences with other men in prison. The advice I have, especially for the men, is this is a two-way relationship. The demands that you make via phone or via visit to your wife or to your girlfriend, that has an impact on them. They have to carry that away with them. And so you don't want to put more guilt on something that they've probably are already feeling. We all have a sense of helplessness. And so I like to be more aware of what Sharon was going through so that my needs weren't impacting her any more than necessary, and hers weren't impacting me any more than necessary. You know, one of the things that keeps coming up in prison is finances, because, you know, we're paid basically a dollar a day for whatever little job we get there. And so as an inmate, you have this desire to have things fill your life up, and usually that stuff off of a canteen list, whether it's a new pair of shoes, a new radio, food, whatever. So there's this desire to demand money from your family. And for me, it was the opposite. You know, as a person who was used to providing for my family, I had to find a way to fill that need while still being in prison. And for me, I decided that even though I was only making, at the time I was making $70 a month, roughly on average, working as an education tutor, I was going to only keep a portion of that. And so I was sending anywhere from 40 to 60% of that home every month. And when I wasn't working, Sharon was sending me a little bit of money each month. So it was a give and take, and just as if we were in the same household and contributing financially to the budget. So we kept that connection and we kept that communication open, and we were honest with each other through the process. You know, if she said, hey, I really am in a bind here, I would say, here, take the whole thing. Or, hey, I'm not working, I need to buy a pair of shoes. You know, it's going to be X amount. Can you find a way in the next, you know, several months to send it home? It wasn't a demanding process for us. It was another process of our staying connected and staying in communication.
And the advice to others would be?
Keep the lines open. Don't say things to each other that is going to add to the stress for the relationship. Be honest, but don't be cruel. We found that we could be honest about the troubles we were having either in our relationship or in the way we were making decisions, just as if we were side by side in the same home. But we weren't cruel about it. And so you have to be tender with each other.
So communication.
Big one. Mm. Yeah.
To both of you, Sharon and Ben, the best of luck as you continue on this journey.
Thank you very much, Karen. And we really appreciate you inviting us here.
And I'm glad we had the opportunity to share our story. Anything that we can do to help others has always been our goal.
You have been listening to KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Again, I want to thank my guests, Ben and Sharon. Thank you to our engineer. Good night.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to broadcast live from the Inner City Blues Festival, Saturday, April 13th, from 7 to 10 p.m. Healthcare for All Oregon is throwing a party called the Inner City Blues Festival, Healing the Healthcare Blues, in the Groove of Love. Northwest Blues Stars are returning for a night of music that will benefit the work of statewide coalition Healthcare for All Oregon for universal, affordable healthcare for all Oregonians. KBOO is proud to help sponsor the Inner City Blues Festival to take place Saturday, April 13th at the Melody Ballroom, 615 Southeast Alder. Doors at 6 and KBOO's live broadcast starts at 7. More information can be found at kboo.fm/innercitybluesfestival2013.
In this country. What up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of Hard Knock Radio. David D. hanging out with you this afternoon. On today's show, we talk with author and journalist Teo Tambe. We also talk with filmmaker Shaka Jamal and rap artist, activist Jasiri X. We're going to talk about the Game Changers Project and media. All that and more coming up.
And it is 7:04 p.m. Monday, April 8th. You are listening to KBOO Portland, and up next is Hard Knock Radio, featuring interviews with David Roach of the Oakland International Film Festival and Jasiri X discussing his new album, Ascension. Stay tuned.
This is Cynthia McKinney, and you're listening to Hard Knock Radio.
I'm Arianna Huffington, and when I'm in the Bay, I keep it locked to Hard Knock Radio. News, views, and hip-hop.
This is Harry Belafonte on Hard Knock Radio.
This is Congresswoman Barbara Lee. When I'm not throwing down on the floor of Congress, looking out and fighting for your rights, I'm listening to Hard Knock Radio.
This is your...